This episode is proudly brought to you by Be Parent Surrogacy. Head to BeParentSurrogacy.com to learn more.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
I know that one thing that we really appreciated about him in his audio interview was he seemed like a genuinely happy person. And that was really important to us because we both have struggled with, you know, depression and anxiety and just, you know, all kinds of fun mental health things. And we wanted our kid, we didn't know we were going to have a daughter at that point, but we wanted our child to have like just a fighting chance at like just happiness undisrupted by intrusive thoughts and like feeling sad for kind of no reason. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we didn't need a genius or an athlete. We just wanted happy.
Welcome, y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. I'm your gay host, Jamie, and this is the show that celebrates, highlights, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA+ families in all of our fabulous identities. And this conversation that you're about to hear does not disappoint on the fabulous identities front, or the fabulous people for that matter. I got to sit down with Robert and Shannon. They are a wonderful queer couple who made a baby the queer way, and we get really... We dive into all the decisions and the choices you have to make when you are a cisgender person and a transgender person trying to make a baby together. It's an awesome conversation. We go deep on the donor choice and fertility things. It's great. You're going to love it. And these two are so fun. You're just going to love it. Before I roll the tape, I do want to say one thing. I am always actively looking for more stories to tell on this show, and I think I'm really lucky as a podcast host of this here show that I don't have any shortage of people who want to be on the show. Like, y'all reach out, y'all tell me, oh my God, I have to tell my story. And I really appreciate that. And I'm always, always looking for more stories to tell. I want to tell all the stories. So please continue reaching out. And I also want to stress, I like to know that you have listened to the show before reaching out. If you say you've listened to the show, I actually want you to actually have listened to the show. What I'm learning is as the show grows, people are seeing the little clips that I share on social media and not actually going in and listening to the entire show. And so I get a lot of DMs from people, and DMs get lost because social media gets a little bit messy. There's a lot going on over there. I cannot stress enough that if you really, really want to be on the show, you should send an email to thequeerfamilypodcast@gmail.com. That is the most direct way to get to me. And even there, it might take me a while. I still am one person manning a very busy inbox. So I promise I will get back to you. It might take a second though, and you might need to nudge me again. But the best way to get a hold of me is to email me. And that also tells me that you're a listener of the show, which warms my heart. And you're not trying to peddle your wares, so to speak. Although if you have something that helps our community, I am all about sharing it. But I don't need everybody reaching out to me, trying to peddle their wares to my beautiful, beautiful queer community that we have built up and I love so much. So anyway, if you want to be on the show, shoot me an email, thequeerfamilypodcast@gmail.com. You can try through the DMs and you might hear back, but you might not. So also follow on the socials too. I'm not saying don't follow me on the socials. And then I'm not saying don't engage on social media because I'm there for it. It's just that if you want to be a guest, that's the best pathway for it. Anywho, all right, let's roll this here tape because I think it's a really fun episode and I think you're going to enjoy it. And I know y'all have things to do today, so you don't need to hear me yammering in your ears for too long. So let's go roll the tape. Helen and Beulah, let's do this. Roll this tape. Here we go.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Robert and Shannon.
Hi.
It's wonderful to have you. You know what? Let's do this. Without further ado, it's time for the audience, the listeners at home, to find out who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad. Okay, get set. Go.
We are two regular, degular, schmegular queers who were friends for 8 years before we started dating. And we bought sperm like 4 months after we started dating. Oh gosh, I am really butchering this. Robert, jump in.
And yeah, that's it. And now we're married and we have a 2-year-old and we're here to talk about it.
Yeah.
That was straight. Good. I love that. That was awesome. Good job. To the point, under 30 seconds, even with a little snafu in the middle. Good work. Good job picking it up. So two regular, degular queers. I think that's what you said.
Yes, I borrowed it from Cardi B. Regular, degular, schmegular.
Oh, I see. I don't even know that.
That's a funny way of saying regular.
I love that. Two regular, degular queers. Schmegular queers. Who bought sperm. When did you buy your sperm?
Like 4 months after we started dating. Like we started dating in May of 2020 and had sperm by November.
You know what? Let's just dig in right there, because usually I take it back to like, you know, your story of meeting and stuff, but I don't want to. I wanted to take it right to that point, because what?
You start, Robert. I'll jump in.
Yeah, there is actually like a little sampling before we started dating, which obviously, you know, we had been friends and I was very family minded, I guess you would say. And so I had at some point actually sort of propositioned Shannon to like platonically co-parent. And I just recently learned as we were kind of reminiscing that she thought I was completely insane. But she didn't tell me that. She was gracious about it.
I got this text message early in the morning and I was like, what? He is crazy. But I was like, that is such a big and important and like really kind thing, because I knew how important having a family was to Robert and how important having a family was and is to me, to both of us. And so I was like, I can't just say no, even though that is like kind of what my gut was. I think deep down, I knew I couldn't handle a platonic co-parenting relationship. But I was like, no, I have to actually think about this, because that's such a nice thing for him to ask me. And it came down to like, maybe.
Oh, my God. So you weren't romantic at this point. You weren't like together.
Yeah. When I first kind of raised the idea to her, we were not. So then we started dating in the pandemic, which she was only willing to entertain because I had already had COVID and she was very COVID cautious. And these were still in the days where we thought like, oh, you have it once, you're not going to get it again. I mean, this was early, like 2020, right? You know? And so I was a part of the safe list of very few people she'd be willing to see, you know, 6 feet away in the alley by her house. And so this blossomed into a relationship from there. Oh gosh, Shannon, how did we get on the topic of let's buy sperm before we were engaged? Do you remember?
Well, I think we had a brief conversation about like what adoption would look like. And I think we both had some fears about not being picked as like, you know, not cisgender, heterosexual, Christian people. And, you know, we're pretty working class people. We can't afford private adoption. So that kind of went out the window. Right away. And we started talking more seriously about donor conception. And I was very delusional that IUI was going to work for us. It didn't, spoiler alert. So yeah, that just seemed like the more practical solution. Also, you know, I did have kind of an emotional attachment to like being pregnant, carrying a child, giving birth. Although while I was giving birth, I thought, well, you know, maybe adoption would have been good too.
I want to stop you here because I just want to highlight the fact that I talk all the time on the show about how intentional we are and how in queer relationships, the talk of family building comes rather early on, because when you have too much of one thing and not enough of the other, you have to figure out how you're going to do it, which is what you're so beautifully explaining here. But y'all started talking about family building even before you were together. So that's a first. That's a first for me. And I love that.
Yeah.
It was all very lesbian. It was all very lesbian.
Very lesbian. Yeah. Very U-Haul situation. Shannon, you said you had a strong tie to wanting the pregnancy. I'm the same as you. I wanted it so bad and I wanted the birth and then realized I hated that. And that was silly. Also super special. Robert, did you have any inkling? Like, what was your thoughts surrounding pregnancy and birth and all the things?
I'm very fortunate, I think, in that I actually grew up around like queer adults and like donor conceived children, and not a part of my family, but like kind of in my local community and in the city, like friends of my parents, stuff like that. So I was kind of exposed to that from a very young age. And I like had a concept that that was a possibility, which I know so many of us don't, and just saw that as like, you know, a completely typical and valid way to build a family. In terms of like the genetic tie, I had gone through like all of my lower surgeries. I guess we didn't even bring that part up when we were talking about the regular, degular, schmegular queers. I'm trans. and so, yeah, rewind. I mean, I think, gosh, probably think, most listeners can clock that, but I'm trans.
I think so.
yeah. So I had had all my lower surgeries in 2018. And with that obviously came, you know, removal of the ovaries and all of that. And at the time, actually, my doctors had even encouraged keeping an ovary. Like I, you know, nowadays they're actually getting better about having those conversations, you know, and again, big city, pretty trans competent doctors. And they were like, hey, you might want it one day. They also told me this could potentially be helpful for cardiac health. But, you know, there is the dysphoria piece. I didn't really want something that I might have to get checked or, and then also at the time, I was married. I was previously married, and I had this idea that keeping something, she didn't want children, still doesn't. And I had this idea that like keeping something just in case was almost like disrespectful. And I want to be very clear. That wasn't like, she didn't ask me to get rid of it. Right. Now that I look back on it, like that's a very kind of, it was an immature thought process, right? Like I think it was a way to try to show like commitment and devotion. But we would never ask that of a cis person, right? Like we would never go to a cis person and be like, hey, will you just have your ovaries removed because your current partner doesn't want kids, right? Like, and again, that wasn't asked of me, but just, you know, that was my thought process at the time. So that's my little PSA about trans fertility preservation for others. so yeah, I kind of came into the relationship knowing that, you know, I had no gametes to bring to it.
I appreciate you sharing all that information, and I would never ever ask you about your personal body, and I appreciate you sharing it, and I hope I didn't step over any lines with the question I asked. I just want to make sure that everybody knows that I'm not like going around asking people what parts they have. Like I don't do that. So
no, it's fine. All that being said, like while I think other people should like preserve their fertility options if they think that's even remotely a possibility for them one day, I don't have any like hard feelings about how it turned out. Like my kid is the perfect kid for me. I'm obsessed with her. She's obsessed with me, if I do say so myself. Like, you know, we're so bonded. Like it is truly a non-issue. But yeah, I just think like in the spirit of keeping doors open, like something for other trans people to think about.
And in the spirit of cardiac health, that's the part that I worry about the most is the cardiac health.
I hear that. Yeah. And it's so great to know that they are strides being made around trans health and fertility and all of the things. We'll be right back.
Podcast, love is love.
All right, folks, when you are navigating gender, fertility, biology, and all the layers that can come with that, building a family can feel complicated. That's why having a team who handles the medical, the legal, and all the emotional pieces together can make such a difference. Be Parent Surrogacy brings everything under one roof, from IVF and embryo collection to legal guidance and ongoing support. So you're not trying to figure it all out and piece it together all on your own. There are no waiting lists to get started, which is such a good plus. When you're ready to go, you're ready to go. And every surrogate and donor is triple screened for health and safety. It's not just a service. It's a community built on trust, compassion, and the belief that love makes a family. Learn more or schedule a free consultation at beparentsurrogacy.com. Ooh, and if you mention the Queer Family Podcast, you'll get $2,000 off any service you book. Go make those babies and then come tell me about them. All right, let's get back to it. All right, folks, if you know anything about my family, you would know that we are big campers, like big. We love to camp. Very lesbian of us, I know. And every year we camp with our chosen family, our lesbian friends. They're the kids, the dog, it's a whole thing. And we have been saying forever that we're going to rent an RV and actually tour part of the country together. And I genuinely think 2026 might be the year. And here's why. I am so excited about Outdoorsy. It is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the U.S. And it makes renting an RV shockingly easy. You don't have to own one. You just search for a rig that fits your crew. You book it with built-in insurance and 24/7 roadside assistance. And then you go. Like, so fun. And listen, y'all, I'm so excited about this. An RV isn't just transportation. It's how you stay closer to the action. So you don't have to do any sold-out hotels, no inflated prices for the campsite, no long commutes from some random motel 45 minutes away. You can get closer to the beach. You can get closer to the trailhead. You can get closer to the festival, the game, whatever, wherever you're headed. You can drive it yourself, or you can just tow it, or even have it, you can even have it delivered and fully set up at your destination. So cool. So you can turn the drive into the vacation. So fun, like a lesbian dream. I kid you not. Or you can just show up and start relaxing at the campsite or wherever it is, by the river. I don't know. Like, sky's the limit. If 2026, y'all, is your big road trip year, go check it out. And here is the really fun part. If you use promo code QUEERFAM, you're going to get all the service fees removed from your booking in 2026. That's promo code QUEERFAM, QUEERFAM, at outdoorsy.com. Go make that road trip or camping or whatever it is happen. I'll see you on the road, y'all.
Love is love.
Okay, so you bought the sperm real fast. And how did we choose the donor? How'd that search go?
Well, I thought I wanted to be very involved in it. And then I just one look at the website, I was like, maybe I don't want to be as involved as I thought. So I told Robert, bring me 10 candidates, which he didn't. He brought me 3. And thank God, because if I would have had 10 candidates.
10 is a lot, man.
I had no idea what an insane ask that was. I had no idea. So he brought me 3 wonderful candidates. And actually, sort of the interesting thing about the donor that we chose is that we used Fairfax Cryobank, not sponsored, but would love a check if they wanted to send one.
I would love it.
They had a thing where we could like put both of our pictures in and they would show us like
the face match. Yeah.
Oh, that's fun. Like,
as a baby, this donor was a match for Robert's baby picture, but his adult picture was a match for my adult picture, which is actually really weird because he looks like Robert. Like, we have this photo of him, and when we show it to people, I say, oh, well, he looks a lot like Robert. And they're like, oh my God, that's weird. Yeah, he does. So that was kind of a unique thing that we definitely noticed.
That's cool.
Yeah, I really appreciated that Shannon let me take the lead in that department. It made me feel very involved. And, you know, like Shannon and I kind of talk about this like between ourselves, but like our daughter, as she exists right now, truly would not exist without both of us. You know, like obviously Shannon did more of the heavy lifting, right? But that would have happened even if I was biologically related. She would have done more of the heavy lifting because she birthed this baby, you know? Mm-hmm. But either way, like, the time, the money, the thought, like all of it, you know, this is a joint effort. And I have always felt that way because of the way that Shannon included me, you know.
I love that you're saying this right now. I just want to take a second and just like stamp it because it's so funny. I just was having a conversation with my 8-year-old and he was like, no, mommy didn't make me. You made me because I birthed him. Right. And I said, no. We both made you. We both made you. I gave birth to you, but mommy helped make you too. And it's a really it's an aspect of the conversations that we have with our children. And it's something really special and unique, even though we might not be biologically tied. In queer families, we created our babies together. We did. And that's, it's a special, strong bond, I think. And I love that you're highlighting that. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Carry on.
No, actually, that conversation, just a quick aside, really makes me think of something our daughter said the other night. So again, she's a little over 2.5 and you know, still so in the early stages of kind of grasping what we're talking about when we talk about her having a donor and how she came to be. But we read her, you know, the little book, and we, you know, took the opportunity to show her the picture of her donor. And I think, yeah, used terminology like, you know, this man helped make you. You know, so you have certain, you might have certain things in common with him, you know, because his genes helped make you. And she kind of looked at him, and then she looked at me, and she said, "Were you there?" Oh. And we thought that was just like really quite a question for a 2.5-year-old. Like, she, okay, it's starting to kind of click for her that, like, okay, he has a role, mom has a role, and she's grasping to kind of figure out, like, what was your role? Where were you? You know, like, so we thought that was like a good sign that she's starting to like kind of piece all these things together in her origin story, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you're doing it right. And you're doing it right. You're doing it right. She's learning
Thank
in
you.
Real time. I love it. Right. And that's why we're so special. This is why queer families are so freaking special. Because we're so intentional with how we make these babies, how we raise these babies, how we talk to them about where they came from and how they were made with so much love and intention. Like, come on. I just love it. It just, sorry, I'm having like real affirming moments right now. Continue, please. I love
it. No, well, I agree.
So when we were first, you know, like, thinking of having her, and then when she was like on her way, I was like, yeah, we'll just talk to her about it all the time, like it won't be a big deal. But then she's born, and it always feels like an awkward time to bring it up. So I was kind of surprised how much we did have to be like, okay, at bedtime tonight we're gonna read the book, even when she's like itty bitty and like, you know, basically just sucking on her feet all the time, we always wanted to make sure that it was like a conversation, because it felt weird to wait, you know. But I was surprised how it didn't seem to come up as organically as I thought it was going to.
Well, I think it's a muscle, right? I think it's a muscle that you regularly flex. And the more you do it, the easier it is to talk about it. And then the more you do it, the more the child will start coming to you and just talking about it, right? When it's just a part of the regular conversation in the house and part of the bedtime routine. That's what it was for us too. For so long, it was just a part of the bedtime routine. We just pulled one of the books down, and if they asked questions, we answered them in regards to how our family relates to this family in the book or whatever. And now that they're older, it just comes up organically. It comes up whenever it comes up organically now. And it's, there's no stigma in it. There's no weirdness. There's no like, we have to make a point of bringing this up this time. You know, we have to make a point of doing it this month. It's not like that now, but I understand what you're saying. Like in the beginning, you have to figure out how you kind of train that muscle, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I'm glad to know that it does get more organic over time though. Thank you.
It does. And there's so many books now. You can add books to it that focus on different aspects, because then the conversation over the years does have to change. And you do have to remember, oh God, I got to bring up the donor siblings at some point. Like, you do have to remember that has to be added to the convo. But there's a book for that too, you know?
Great.
So like my way of doing it was always just to go look and see what books are out there that pertain to the thing I need to add to the conversation, and then just threw it on the shelf and, oh, look, there's this one. Let's do this one tonight. And then, you know, for me, that was just the easiest way in. Everybody has their own way. So, but I love a good book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the books have been really helpful.
Yeah.
So you asked about, I know I took us on a tangent, you asked about the donor search. So yes, I used the face match kind of feature on Fairfax, and we kind of narrowed down from there. Of course, you know, we're very privileged to, you know, being white. There's a greater number of donors available. And I wouldn't say that we had super strong, you know, requirements. I know that some people are looking for like higher education, or they're looking for height, or they're looking for, well, I'm 5'7". So, you know, I don't need a super tall donor. I don't need to have a son who's like, you know, a foot taller than me. So I don't know that we had any like huge non-negotiables like that. I also didn't personally exclude for ID disclosure or non-ID disclosure, which I know is, you know, maybe not as common these days in our community. So ultimately the donor we have is not an ID disclosure. How do I want to talk about this? I don't see it at all as like a mistake or a failure or anything like that, because, you know, we wouldn't change our donor choice for anything, because like it has brought us this family that we have. What I do understand it, I understand it to be an additional conversation, right? Like this is, and that's something that Shannon and I talked about at the time that we did it. Like, this is something now that we're going to have to talk to our kid about, you know, and we're going to have to like be adults and face whatever feelings she may or may not have about that. You know, we feel kind of, you know, of course the banks can say like, oh, in the age of DNA testing, there is no true anonymity, you know? And so certainly like, if that's a road she wants to go down one day, we're in full support of it. Like it's not, we have no desire for this to be a secret. We've made a commitment not to find him. She has not made any commitments. Like it is her right to do whatever she wants, you know? So really what we were looking for was a person who, if that contact is made one day, you know, even if he doesn't want a relationship, which is his right, that he would at least greet her respectfully. You know, we just wanted someone who seemed like he had a good, you know, emotionally mature head on his shoulders and would at least treat her, you know, with kindness and respect in his response, no matter what level of relationship he was willing to.
I know that one thing that we really appreciated about him in his audio interview was he seemed like a genuinely happy person. And that was really important to us, because we both have struggled with, you know, depression and anxiety and just, you know, all kinds of fun mental health things. And we wanted our kid, we didn't know we were going to have a daughter at that point, but we wanted our child to have like just a fighting chance at like just happiness undisrupted by intrusive thoughts and like feeling sad for kind of no reason. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We didn't need a genius or an athlete. We just wanted happy. Like,
I hear that. Yeah. I hear that. There's a positive spin for having to use a donor is you get to weed out the bad qualities and bring in maybe some of the ones that you'd rather have.
Right. And I knew that she was already going to be predisposed to some of these things from, you know, my genetics. So, I thought, you know, this way we could like water down that possibility.
I hear that. And I just want to, in reference to you choosing the non-ID disclosed donor, I want to reiterate, there is no space for judgment in any of these paths we take. I just want to reiterate that, because I know that amongst those who use donor conception, there are degrees of judgment that happen for the choices that people make. And I don't think that's fair. We all make the choice that is right for us. And I think especially in queer families, we are centering the child. We are putting the child first, which you so beautifully illustrated. You are thinking about her and how she's going to be with this decision that you know you made for her. We made the decision for our kids. We had to. They didn't have a voice when we made them. So as long as we are centering our children and knowing that they may have an opinion in the future, and we're doing everything we can to mitigate any harm that could possibly befall them, we're doing the right thing, and we made the right decision for our family. And I want to put a stamp on that and just say that outright, because we all have to choose the path we choose, and we all have to feel really proud of the path we choose. And you should be very proud of the path you choose. I know you are. And I didn't choose a known donor because I knew that wasn't right for our family, right? And some people would say known donors are the only thing you should do. Everybody has to do what's right for them. Okay, I'm going to get off my soapbox, but I just...
We agree.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and we're doing our best, right?
Yeah.
And we put a lot of intention behind it, so trust us, we know what we're doing. Leave us alone.
No, I appreciate that. But that actually does kind of circle me back to the dibbling thing, because you mentioned it. And I will say, at least for me, I have a theory, and I could be totally off base, but I see these other, you know, because we're in like queer community, I see these other friends of mine like having these really expansive dibbling groups that they find. And mm-hmm. that was actually something that Shannon and I were hoping for our daughter. We're not sure if she'll ever have a sibling. She has no first cousins. Like, we have a pretty adult heavy family, which is great. And she is spoiled to no end. But, you know, we would love for her to have, you know, more children, you know, kind of familial type relationships. And we have not really found much. We know of one. And we've had some brief email interaction, and we're definitely open to wherever that goes in the future. But mm-hmm. I kind of have wondered if, because it's a non-ID donor, if uh-huh. maybe it attracted the type of families who are less interested in that kind of contact, more interested in privacy, things like that. So that's the only thing I would say is, like, now looking back, I'm like, oh, I've just noticed a difference with my friends who have the open ID donors, and then they get in these dibbling groups, and it's a lot of like lesbian families and stuff. And I'm just wondering if this has attracted like a different family setup. And we're like, please, please, we want to get the kids together. Reach out.
I hear that. That's really interesting. But, and also when the children get older, they may, as long as they're told about their donor and their origin story, which we don't know, they may start to try to initiate contact too. So, you know, it could happen down the line when the children are able to voice what they want, possibly. But that's an interesting thought.
Yeah, I guess we'll see where it goes.
We have an open ID donor, and honestly, I've only found, I think it's three other families. I haven't found any others. And you would think, I don't know, I feel like there's a lot of queer families that know about me and my situation, and I feel like they might have put two and two together, you know? And yeah. I've only found three. So that's interesting too, because I thought, I would think there would be more. But things we have to think about, right? Mm-hmm. The things we put a lot of thought into. I feel like we've covered everything, and we've gone so deep into this donor. I love this conversation. It's so rich. Is there anything else like we can talk about in regards to your family journey and the whole journey you've been on? And
well, we definitely want to have another baby, but you know, that'll just, we'll know when the time is right, maybe. But it's definitely something that we're talking about seriously, and you know, hope to get started on that sometime fairly soon.
That's exciting. Do you still have sperm?
We have embryos. We do have sperm, and we have embryos.
You did IVF.
Yeah, we bought 4 vials of our donor's sperm and wasted 3 on IUIs that didn't work because, like I said, I was delusional. I have PCOS, so I don't know if anyone else who has PCOS is listening, but I had so many eggs. I got ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome. That was really miserable, but after 10 days, it does actually go away and you don't look pregnant anymore, which is very strange. But yeah, we got, I think it was 13 embryos. And yeah.
Wow.
Kind of an insane number. I have PCOS, so I got 33 eggs. And then, fertility funnel. Now you know about why I had OHSS. I was in a lot of pain. It felt like there was bruising, and when I went in for like an ultrasound, they were like, "Oh, your ovaries are kissing."
Oh my God.
I was like, "What does that mean?" She was like, "They're touching like this." And I was like, "Oh, that's definitely what I'm feeling." It was wild.
Because they were so engorged.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And that was after they did the egg retrieval. So yeah, it was pretty wild. But we did just the one transfer with 2 embryos. So we only got the one baby from that double embryo transfer. I always say that our daughter like ate the other embryo, and that's why she's like strong and like smart and stuff. The power of two. Hey, Indigo Girls reference.
Yeah, I heard it. I heard
shout
you.
Out to the Indigo Girls. Ernie. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
I told you, it's all very lesbian. Yeah, also not sponsored.
Also not sponsoring, but tickets. Feel free to come on in. Come on. Come on, Indigo Girls.
Oh, that would be so great. Dream guests. Yeah, dream guests. Totally. Yeah. Everyone tune into that one when it happens. It's happening.
We're manifesting in this episode.
That was kind of our transfer choice. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm meandering a little bit. We were like wrapping up and I was like, no, let's talk about my PCOS.
No, because this is interesting too. And so now you have what, like 11 embryos left?
That's where I was going. We have 11 embryos left. It feels like we should probably try and use one of them, you know?
I mean, you have them. I mean, but that's up to you. I can't make that decision for you, but that's amazing that you have so many. That's awesome.
Yeah. I consider myself very, very, very lucky. That is like the one PCOS superpower, because otherwise having PCOS is like terrible.
I can only imagine. Yeah, it's the things these bodies go through. But this has really been super special, and I appreciate the two of you. And thank you so much for sharing your story and coming on. And I'm excited to hear when number two starts.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Fun.
Queer Family Podcast.
A huge thank you to our sponsors of this here episode, Be Parent Surrogacy. Learn more about them. Find the links to their websites in the show notes. Make those babies, y'all, and then come tell me about them.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier. You're going to join and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in. And I'll see you next time. Mwah.